Hey, welcome back to 7 Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're digging into a book that's got a pretty provocative title, Pay the People, written by John Driscoll, Morris Pearl, and a group called the Patriotic Millionaires. So Sophie, first question that popped into my head when I picked this up, is this just a bunch of rich folks feeling guilty, or is there actual substance here?
Hey there, Sam, great to be here. That's exactly the right question, and honestly, it's what makes this book so interesting. These are people who've made a lot of money in the current system, but they've come to believe that the system is broken, and they make a pretty compelling case that raising wages and distributing wealth more evenly isn't just moral, it's actually good for everyone, including the rich.
Okay, so they're arguing against the whole low-wage economy myth. The idea that keeping labor costs down is necessary for businesses to compete and for the economy to stay healthy.
Right, and they dismantle that pretty quickly. Their point is that the real problem isn't that workers are paid too much, it's that they're paid way too little. You've got productivity going up, but wages have been flat for decades. Workers are contributing more, but they're not seeing any of that in their paychecks.
Yeah. And they trace this shift back to the late 70s, 80s. After World War II, wages grew right along with productivity. Strong unions, high tax rates on the wealthy, and this idea that a rising tide lifts all boats. Then it all changed.
Exactly.
Deregulation, the decline of unions, globalization, a tax system that favors capital over labor. The result is that today the top 1% controls more wealth than the entire middle class combined. And that's not just unfair, it's actually destabilizing.
I like that they come at this without class warfare, though. They're not demonizing rich people because they are rich people. They're saying, look, we've benefited from this, but we see that it's not sustainable.
And that's a powerful position. They talk about how extreme inequality weakens consumer demand. A billionaire can only buy so many cars, but millions of families who would spend every extra dollar on rent, groceries, education, they don't have anything to spend. So you get an economy that produces plenty, but most people can't afford to buy what's being made.
So what's their big solution? Just pay people more?
At the heart of it, yeah. That means raising the minimum wage to a living wage, strengthening collective bargaining rights, expanding Social Security and Medicare. And they go further, proposing ideas like universal basic income and profit sharing for workers.
And the part that really got me was when they argued that paying people more actually benefits businesses. I always thought higher wages would hurt companies, but they point to studies showing that higher pay means more productive, loyal, innovative workers. Less turnover, better morale, and a virtuous cycle where workers spend more, which creates more jobs.
And there are real-world examples like Denmark and Germany, where they pay workers significantly more than we do, and they have strong economies. And they address the automation fear that raising wages will just push businesses to replace workers with machines. Their response is that automation is happening anyway, and the answer isn't to keep wages low. It's to invest in education and a safety net for workers.
And they say the predicted job losses from minimum wage increases never materialize. When cities raise the minimum wage, local economies get a boost because workers have more to spend.
Right.
And then they get to the really radical part, the question of wealth itself. They argue that no one becomes truly wealthy on their own. Every fortune is built on public investments, roads, schools, the internet, the courts, and scientific discoveries, all paid for by taxpayers. So the wealthy owe a debt to society.
So they're calling for higher taxes on the wealthy, a wealth tax, closing loopholes. But they're careful to distinguish between productive wealth, which creates jobs, and extractive wealth, which just accumulates power.
And they use that revenue to fund things that would raise incomes for ordinary people, better schools, affordable healthcare, infrastructure, and direct cash transfers. They see money as power, and when it's concentrated in too few hands, it corrupts democracy.
They also push back on blaming poor people for their own struggles. They say millions work full-time and still live in poverty. The system isn't working for them, and telling them to work harder isn't the answer.
and they tie economic inequality to racial and gender inequality, showing how raising wages would disproportionately help Black and Brown communities and women who are overrepresented in low-wage work.
So how do we actually make this happen? They acknowledge the political power of the wealthy, but they point to successful movements for economic justice, like the labor movement and the fight for a higher minimum wage.
They stress the importance of changing the narrative, challenging the myths that justify inequality. And they're doing that themselves, using their wealth to advocate for policies that would reduce their own privilege.
The part that stuck with me most is their line about the measure of a society. It's not how much the riches can accumulate, but how well it takes care of its most vulnerable. And by that measure, we have a long way to go.
And honestly, if you want to go deeper, the whole library is over on 7minutebooks.com/app with over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It starts at $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 once for lifetime access. But ultimately, this book is a call to action. It's saying we have the resources to create a society that works for everyone, but we need the will to act. And the first step is simple: pay the people. We'll see you in the next one.